So this is Dr. Kate Cregan, and I'm interviewing Mel and Fran Fall on the 19th of April 2024 at their home in Hawthorne, and the purpose of the interview is to contribute to a larger oral history project being put together by the Australian Garden History Society. So I will ask you first, Fran, if you could tell me where you were born, when you were born, where you were brought up, all those sorts of basic things.
I was born in Melbourne in 1942, brought up with a government education, both primary school and secondary school, lived in Strathmore, went to Strathmore Primary School, then Glenroy High School, then University High School, after which I became a home economics teacher, taught for 3 years after graduating in 1962, and taught in country schools, 2 years in Shepparton and 1 year at Warrnambool High School. Then I spent 18 months overseas, travelling around, did a cordon bleu certificate in London, came home. After 6 months, I got a job at my old alma mater and taught there for a number of years, then went to Burwood State College in the art department, taught textiles. Continued teaching there, met Mel on a walking tour organised by a man at Burwood State College, where we went to Nepal. And I'd met Mel actually beforehand, and then we did all the walk together, some staff and students, about 24 of us, which was fun. Came back to Australia, got a couple of empty years there. No, I was still back at teaching at Burwood. Got married eventually to Mel. Had two children who went to primary school. We each owned a house, so we sold both of them eventually, bought this house. When the children were late primary school, I went to Burnley and did a course in horticulture at Burnley. Before it was taken over by Melbourne University. And since then I've been doing garden maintenance and interfering in other people's gardens. And that's about it.
Mm.
So was gardening a part of your childhood?
No.
Not at all?
No.
Interesting. Mel, if you could
Right.
give a bit of background.
I was born in 1948. Went to primary, grew up in Brighton, East Brighton, near the tip, and went to primary school and secondary school at Haileybury College in Brighton. Went to Monash University, did commerce or economics honours, and then I had a stint overseas, only 6 months, just travelling around with a little bit of bookkeeping in London, and then came back here and had a somewhat checkered career until finally settling into public accounting at about age 40 odd, and then eventually finished my working career working for a client. So, and we discovered garden history, I think, through the National Trust. We actually met on a garden, on a National Trust trip for young trust people. And so, which culminated in the trip to Nepal with Fran and Graham Wheeler's group. And we got married in 1978. In 83, we bought this house and been here ever since. That's about it. My mother was a keen gardener. I mowed the lawns under duress. That's about it. I guess, yeah, while the kids were very young, we were inactive in garden history, and then I got a bit older, and so working bees came on the scene. And out of nowhere, I became National Treasurer for 6 years. We've had quite a bit of fun together with garden history since then. And also, I had a heavy involvement in the 2017 National Conference, which was sprung on Melbourne at short notice. So we might come back to that.
So it sounds like you both had an interest in things historical. So could you tell me a bit more about that? About your interest in, is it in historical buildings just here, overseas?
Well, I did art with its bit of art history at school. I was very interested in old buildings when I went overseas, but I considered myself pretty ignorant then. Used to go, went to all the art galleries that everybody is told they should go and see, which was enjoyable. When I went to university to do fine arts, which I didn't mention before, I'd been told when I was teaching, oh, you've got to get further qualifications. So I thought, well, I'll go to university and do art history and regular sort of history. And I didn't ever finish it because children came on the scene. But I got higher distinctions in both art history, and I did urban history, which was very enjoyable. And I would have enjoyed going on and finishing that, but didn't.
Okay. And is the same true for you, Mel?
I was interested in history, from an amateur point of view. I did Australian history at year 12, and always been interested in travel, which if you're not interested in history, often that curtails what you can do. And very interested in Australian history. My grandparents were in Echuca, which had an interesting history of its own, so that got me in. And I used to go down to the library often with my father. I distinctly remember seeing Frank Hurley's photographs on the Shackleton expedition, so that was already historic, but it was fascinating. I remember browsing through Sands and MacDougall's directories of Melbourne, looking at what was happening in various locations at various times. You're aware of those?
Yes, and, I am, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, we bought an old house. We're both keen in older houses. The house that I put into the family pool wasn't historic, but I had shown an interest in historic housing up until then, and totally ignorant of any architectural terminology or niceties, but just enjoyed the variety. And so we were members of Garden History, and I think it's through Garden History that we learnt about, sorry, members of National Trust.
Yep.
Through that we learnt of Garden History, and I think we joined about the second year of Garden History's existence.
So you've been National Trust members for some time before that?
50 years we've been members of the National Trust.
Ooh, lifetime members. By
yeah, yeah, 1970 we joined.
Yeah, so they put on a lovely function, with guest speaker being the bequests manager. it was very well done, I thought.
John Twyre was there to get his 50-year tip.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was Janet Thompson, was also at the same function, also a
Garden History,
a Garden History person.
Yeah.
So that's the Australian National Trust. And if you made
When we've been overseas, we've done it, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Because you can get reciprocal. Yes, great. And you said that the you met at something that was organised by the National Trust.
Yeah.
Bus tour to Kangaroo Island.
I looked at the ad in the National Trust magazine and thought, oh, that sounds fun. So I invited two girlfriends. I said, you know, that'll be company for us if all the rest of the people are pretty dull.
Or if there are no men.
Yeah. And Mel apparently was invited by a friend of his who was a member of the Young Trust, and Gavin said to Mel, you can come along in case there are no interesting women. And I was impressed. We went across by bus and I was impressed with this person who slept on the on the floor of the bus and made anybody walking the aisle impossible to get past.
Oh, it was up the back of the bus. But I'd already had experience on a bus trip from London to Kathmandu.
Oh, that's quite a trip.
Several years. To come back to Australia. Yeah,
there were quite a few people did that around 1973, between 66 and 73, but then...
Impossible now.
Yeah.
Okay, and so you joined the Garden History Society, you said, in 1980.
It'd be about the second year of the Garden History Society's existence.
Do you know when it started?
I believe it was the early 80s.
Yeah, I think it was about the second year of it.
Yes, whatever year that was.
And what drew you to it? How did you become aware of it?
Oh, through the National Trust again. Mm. And I thought, by that stage, I was more interested in gardening because we had wilderness in our back garden at home, which we shared at that stage. So I said, yes, that'd be quite interesting, nice and practical. So we joined.
And what do you remember of those early days of the Garden History Society?
Oh, we used to go to lectures.
Oh, no, annual general meetings.
Yeah.
Remember a contest for the committee, amazingly, an election.
Yeah, they used to give us all a sheet on our seat when we arrived, and it was, you know, we're going to vote for these people. I mean, it's an extraordinary thought now. You've got to hit people over the head to join the committee. Yeah. But, you know, people used to volunteer to go on the committee and there'd be several vying for one position.
Partly
so we had to vote.
Partly because the organisation was new.
Yeah, and we were all much younger.
Yeah.
But now, I suppose the youngest sort of people would be, well, you'd be lucky to get a 55-year-old, really, wouldn't you?
Mm.
Yeah.
And yet, we and a lot of other people join when they're about in their 30s.
I'm 80.
Yeah, anyway.
40, I think.
Mm.
Yeah.
And what sorts of activities was the society doing then? What sorts of things were you doing? I mean, you say you're attending meetings. You've become much more active since. What sort of drew you towards that?
I think that the working bees.
It was the establishment of the working bees, mm-hmm.
which
yeah.
meant that we could experience historic properties in various parts of Victoria.
And I've always been very inquisitive, and there was the possibility that you'd go into some of these houses, you see, and you'd be able to have
just roaming around the outside and all the outbuildings and the historic plants. That was always interesting.
So what sorts of places did you go to with the working bees?
Oh, well, they were country properties. The unspoken rule is that they should be about no more than 1.5 hours drive from Melbourne because they're too far otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't remember the first one we went to. It would have been Turkeith, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, probably. And possibly Mullerick.
Turkeith and Mullerick are two houses, both with a heavy guilfoyle input.
Okay.
And he helped design the gardens, and they were next to each other at Birragara, north of Birragara.
Mm.
And old money, sheep stations, and the people didn't have any gardeners, unlike in the Victorian times when they were established and they had gardeners who were able to do all the work. And they were young family people, children at home, and it was just too much for them. They couldn't cope with all this big garden and unable to keep it up. So when I think it was Helen Page who I suppose she thought of the idea of working bees, did
she? Yeah, I think so.
A bus. She hired a bus and a whole group of people went down, enthusiastic people with all their tools. They went down to Turkeith, leapt out of the bus and immediately started digging up elm seedlings.
And eliminating the jungle.
Yeah.
Cutting their way through to paths that hadn't been exposed for years because an old lady relative of the owners of the then current owners had been the predecessor, and she hadn't done anything for a few years. And gardens require constant maintenance. But
we had young children then, and when they were a bit older, we used to take them with us. And as far as I know, we're the only people who ever took children.
And the kids enjoyed themselves. They had hay rides, effectively. And
our eldest daughter was able to get on one of those little buggy things, you know, that are supposed to be terribly dangerous. You've got to have a roll on them.
Yeah.
Oh, the four-wheelers.
Yeah. And she used to go around where all the people were working, and they'd pick it up and put it in the tray at the back of it, and she'd drive it and put it back. She thought it was fantastic. And it had a big influence on her as well as her parents who pushed her, because she ended up doing landscape architecture.
I was going to ask you whether you had passed it on, but you've already answered that question.
That's one out of two.
Yeah, the other one, not the slightest bit interested, but she did enjoy it, yeah.
And even at her 12th birthday at Belmont.
Yes.
And our host, Joe Reed, made a cake.
Ninth birthday.
Was it? Ninth. Yeah. Well, I remember it well.
So what other houses have you been?
Well,
those two.
Yerrumbeen. Yerrumbeen is south.
I think you just...
It's off the highway.
You just need to list them, I think, Fran.
Yeah, and no,
Detail's good.
Oh, good.
Yerrumbeen okay. was in the news recently during the fires because the fires came in that area and...
Well, they burnt up to the front door of Belmont too.
Yeah. So that's Turkeith
Turkeith, Meleric,
Yerrumbeen,
and Belmont, both just out of Beaufort.
Belmont's an interesting property because it was plonked down in the middle of the trip to the Gold Rush, and people would be going through to the Gold Rush, and they'd buy stuff from them. You know, they say that that's the best way to earn money at the Gold Rush, not to dig for gold, but to outfit. So they did that a bit, and then later on, it was classed as a pleasure garden, and people used to come from...
Beaufort, might have a day excursion out in the buggy from Beaufort and have picnics around the artificial lake and under the pine trees. So, and the house grew like topsy.
Exponentially.
So the... modest little cottage had an extra addition, and then about 1900 had a grand addition, all in weatherboard with these fantastic sunburst design, both in the house and in the lych gate.
And they were very worried about that place too during the fires. And Joe, the owner, had a very good relationship with the people from Beaufort, and they were the fireys, and they came around and it was very well protected. And the fires got up to a front gate. It was very close, but it was safe because all those men were there with their... hoses that I suppose they could draw water from the lake, so she was fine. Right, so that's four.
We did have one grand working bee a whole weekend down at a place called Warrock, which is an exceptional place out of Casterton, built as a village in 1848 or earlier. And
access from the south.
All the tradesmen were brought in from overseas, so they had they had 48 farm buildings in total around the building, around the property, and just a fantastic place, but way beyond the maintenance that anyone could do, but very historic. And so we had a weekend down there, but that's so far away. That's down past Casterton. It was a case of one working bee, and I don't think there were any other.
The man who owned it then no longer owns it. There's somebody else.
But gee, he owned it for a long time.
He did, yeah.
So that one broke your 1.5 hour rule.
Yeah.
Hence the weekend.
That's right.
And that was organised by John Hawker.
Yeah. There have been other...
Not yet.
So he organised that, and we all went down, and paintbrushes and sanders and everything.
And mattock for the elm suckers.
Mouth-o-matic keen. right, then the next... Another one was Wombat Park, just... out of Dalesford. Beautiful soil, volcanic soil. I must tell you about Belmont, which we have said, but the original cottage was actually seated on the ground, no gap between the ground and the cottage. And Joe's kitchen, it was slopey when we first went there. She got a grant of money from the Heritage Commission, whatever it's called, and that was raised up so that it would be level. But no insulation or anything. The place would have been desperately cold in winter. She kept a fire going in two rooms all day, every day. She had there is a stable there, a huge stable for about at least four horses, I would say. The place is a museum. There's a house, a car from about the 1920s in a garage. Still, you can peer in at this garage. It hasn't been out for years. It would be worth quite a lot to somebody. But a trouble with this stable, it lost its roof in a storm, and once again the heritage people stepped in and paid for re-roofing. But it's fascinating. Two floor levels in the stables, and one of our members has taken a lot of photos of it. So Trevor Pitkin, he's very, very interested in photography of historic buildings. But perhaps you might like to say something about Wombat Park.
It's just a fantastic property, and really, Garden History, as you may be aware, has put out pamphlets on a number of gardens, and I'm pretty sure Wombat Park is one of them. And the atmosphere there in the historic garden is just amazing. The trees. So the house, the main house, is 1912 with its famous tapestry hedge on the circular driveway at the front. But the first house was a little bit
more humble.
Yeah, but it was surrounded by trees, yeah. And the trees are still there. The house is gone, but there'd probably be a number of trees that are on the tree register. But a wonderful driveway. Tree-lined driveway coming up from the road.
A lot of more exotic trees that you don't see very often. Mm. The garden was it was reviewed by Miffy Gilbert, who did a great big report on it.
Mm. And that's a conservation study.
Conservation study that's now been filed away. But you see, when you go and work in these gardens, I sometimes go to the gardens and offer plants, because I enjoy doing propagation. So I'll go and say, look, there's this lovely blah blah, and I think it'd go well there. But you have to be very careful, because you can't give any more modern cultivars that were. That came after the garden was established.
Okay.
For the
so
historic
Fran's done
nature.
Enough reading to know which ones are which, and so she can replant in as it was in the old days.
But I don't offer them plants much now, but, you know, I volunteer with ideas and leave it to them if they're keen. Now, that's all the country ones we've done then.
No.
No?
What no, else well, in Castlemaine we went...
Oh, yeah.
We did a working bee at a little miner's cottage on the creek called Tute's Cottage.
Oh, yeah.
And so we were there for quite a number of times. And a number of our working bees, we had two gardens in the vicinity. We had 2 days. So we went up Saturday, stayed overnight somewhere, and worked at another place on the Sunday. So that was... They were very special.
Yeah, Toots Cottage has now been taken over as a communal garden. And so we don't have anything to do with it. Now, we keep going past and I tut-tut about this and that, not pruning properly. But we also did Buddha at Castlemaine.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we were largely responsible for getting them to take down the big the conifer hedge that was just engulfing the garden. It was far, far too big and nobody could trim it properly. So they had that taken down and I think they've put in...
They replanted.
Yeah, another lot of conifers to grow up and do the same sort of thing. But we always chose to stay at Castlemaine because there was more accommodation offered. And we often go and see people and they say, oh, remember when we stayed in that dreadful house?
Yeah.
And once we stayed at the back of the picture theatre in Castlemaine, there was a little bit of accommodation there.
Yeah, a little weatherboard house, but it had lots of rooms.
There was...
bedrooms, anyway.
Nina Crone was there. Yeah, we had a lot of fun. We'd do communal feeding... And so we go around and say, oh, we stayed there. Oh, we stayed over there.
Which brings up a question that's been going through my mind. How many people would you get to go to these...
Working bees. I doubt we'd ever have had more than about average of 12, would we?
Yeah.
Sometimes we'd have more. But, you know, as time advances, they say, oh, I've got a bad hip, I can't bend down. Mm. All right, that's the end of them.
Yeah, so the numbers were down.
Some people would go and it'd be their social, you see, so they'd take their kneeling pad and squat with a trowel, do very little and just talk. They still do that a bit, yeah.
But numbers. I think Fran and I were both regarded as doers by the owners, so they tolerated the ditherers.
Oh, well, we didn't talk about that one with the what's-her-name's, whose daughter married the MP. Trawalla.
Yeah, at Trawalla.
Okay. He was a shocker, that man, Mackenzie. Helen was in charge of the working bees then, and he wouldn't even let us in the house, really, and we all had to bring our lunch, as everybody in the old days brought their lunch, and we'd go into the house, but Mr. Mackenzie wouldn't let anybody in the house, probably thought we might pinch something, and he would say, don't cut those roses. Well, we'd say it's the right time of year. When are you going to cut them? Well, he said, if you cut them now, the new shoots will be eaten by the cockatoos.
So his basic proposition was that roses in his area should never be pruned.
Yeah, because you'd always have new shoots and cockatoos. Anyway,
I got roundly castigated for cutting out an amazing amount of dead stuff under a rose hedge. But, yeah, so we didn't go back after that.
Yeah, we were happy to pull the plug on that. And anyway, the daughter who married the MP...
Yeah, in the tactical era was that...
she married the MP.
The ownership went... Yeah. It was joint ownership and the property went in the settlement when the Jim Ploughman went belly up. So,
wasn't Ploughman?
Was it?
No. We won't go into that.
Okay.
Could be held against us. Melbourne Gardens.
Well, you got Dandenongs. We've been to a couple of gardens in the Dandenongs, but more recently, probably within the last 10 years, we've been to
Longacres,
Arthur Streeton's garden. Property in the Dandenongs. And that will lead on possibly later into other things we've done for the society, such as organising trips.
Rose Saxon's garden in Warrigal.
Surrey Hills.
Warrigal Road, Surrey Hills. We've been going there for a very long time. That's a lovely garden.
And yeah. She's basically created that, but it's in the style that would have suited the property and what the property would have had in ancient times. And
The Bulls originally owned it, and she lectured at Melbourne University.
Don't know.
Yeah.
Well-known artist, Norma Bull. So.
And she has some... Roe has some films that were taken by... was it her son?
No, the Bull family took the photos 60, 70... 80 years ago, they'd be 80 years old, I reckon.
Yeah, yeah.
And they cobble them together, it's a bit jerky, but they had an artificial, they dammed the creek at the bottom of the garden.
Deep Creek.
Okay.
Back Creek.
Back, yeah.
Yeah. And...
So it was in a valley, and the creek was the property boundary on the south side. And a few years ago, during terrible storms here, all the water came down the creek and blocked up, and it caused the road to sink.
Warrigal Road got washed away.
Yeah.
And was down to one lane for a couple of years. A
long time.
Okay.
And then the council and government and Heritage Victoria stepped in and got it all tickety-boo. But anyway, back to this film. They made a little boat, a model of a boat, and they made a film about this boat sailing down a big river. And it was all very cleverly done. It was supposed to look like a full-sized boat. It's the most wonderful film. And I don't know if she's given it to ACME or not, but it certainly should go there. We've seen it a number of times. It's wonderful.
And they have a little battle, and one boat gets sunk.
Yeah, it's terrific.
So right. There are little gems like that pop up when you visit interesting venues, such as the paintings around the house at the Streeton House. Just a dozen or so round the walls, a few more in the sleep out, and one in the Streeton original, I think, in the outdoor dunny.
Yeah. But after Helen conducted the Working Bees, I think she kept having differences of opinion with people, and she finally said, I've done my last Working Bee, and... I said, oh, well, I'll step up and do that. And the first thing I put down a list of rules, and one of them was, if these people are having us in to do their gardens, I've thought of another garden, they could provide lunch for us, which I thought was fair enough. So we now go and have lunch at them. At the places. They're very generous. And we really much appreciated. It's wonderful.
I think, friend of mine, I had sandwiches on the list, but it's got a bit grander than that in some places.
We had to stop one owner giving us a bottle of wine at lunchtime. We said, no, you can't do that. We won't do any work.
Oh,
so she kept doing that.
And Mary Jane accepted the wine at lunchtime at Mary Jane's Maleric. Anyway.
I forgot to mention about Mount Buninyong.
Oh, yes.
At Buninyong, south of Ballarat.
Yep.
So that's a sheep property.
Yes.
And I don't know, I used to say, Cecilia, when is the... when is the best time to come and do the working bee? And she'd give me a date and then we'd get there and she'd say, sheep shearing.
Yeah, yeah.
So we always seemed to have sheep shearing. But she used to cut, they had a great big hedge of roses and she'd cut the, go along with the chainsaw and prune that hedge. But then they had a climbing hydrangea, huge. You don't see many climbing hydrangeas. And it was growing up at the top of the...
Two and a half stories up, I reckon.
Yeah, it was, huge. And Celia, not Cecilia. And Celia said, Fran, we really need to prune those heads of the flowers off. And I said, yeah, well, we need to prune it properly. And I said, it'd be nice to be able to get up there, but I don't suppose you've got a ladder. And she said, no.
We've got a cherry pick.
Graham?
Pardon? Graham.
Yes.
Graham came up with a cherry picker.
So he came up with a cherry picker and he said, come on, friend, you want to come up here? I wouldn't have a bar of it. So he got into the cherry picker and with his chainsaw or whatever, and I was down saying, go a bit to your right, Graham, yes, Nick. Anyway, everyone thought it was fantastic to prune a garden with a cherry picker. It was fun.
Well, the other thing we did was, cut back a camellia. By a 100-year-old camellia, cut it back by about 90% with the chainsaw, and then the rest of the day...
Picking the stuff up.
Yeah, so you got productive workers dragging the stuff to the bonfire or out of the garden at the very least.
But I'd have to work hard to say, look, if you prune the camellia, it'll be okay, it'll reshoot, it's not the end of it. So they'd, all right, if you say so... It was a slash and burn.
Yeah.
Yep.
Prune. Yeah, but we did that a lot of places. And there are some owners, I'd say, if you cut it down to knee high, about 60 centimetres, oh, I don't know that we can do that. Yeah. Joe down at Belmont is never happy with me doing that, but sometimes we've done it without her looking, and then she'll say... You cut that back last year and look at it now. We told you so.
But you haven't converted it.
Yeah. Yeah, so you had to watch it.
Mm.
But mostly they trust me, so that's good.
Yeah. Well, they even trust me, which is not a good idea. I happened to mention to Jo that she had flickweed.
Oh, yeah.
Getting away, which isn't... A terrible noxious weed, and it really doesn't want to get in. You don't want to let it into the paddocks. That'd be worse. So I mentioned it to her. Well, she spent the next 12 months pulling the stuff out. I don't know whether she solved the problem, but it wasn't.
Oh, it's a lot better. Mm.
It certainly was a lot better. And the Australian bush is slightly less at risk as a result.
So you took over...
From Helen.
Mm. And did that change any of your round of gardens to go to?
No, not really, no.
It did change the society because Fran got on the committee as the coordinator, but she happened to over her authoritative mouth on various other things.
We were talking yesterday about the owner at Turkeith. He trained as a mycologist. Is that the word?
Yep.
And he didn't fall happily into the role of being a farmer.
Right.
And Lockie, he was a lovely fellow, but his wife Janet was the one basically who'd run the farm, but... You know, Lockie worked really, really hard to please her. And they got on all right. But he was not happy. So one year I went and said, after I'd been overseas a couple of times, and I said, you know, Lockie, you could grow rosemary here because it's such a good tough plant. He said, what would I do with rosemary? I said, rosemary oil is something which is very useful. You just grow the rosemary in this hot atmosphere and then you have to distill the oil. No, wouldn't have a bar of it. So another year I said, you know, Lockie... Oh, in the meantime, Tammy Fraser's sister, Christina Heinberg-Hall, got a Churchill scholarship to go overseas and study growing rosemary. And she came back and grew rosemary wherever a farm was. I suppose it was close to the Fraser farm in the Western District. So she did that. Anyway, another year I suggested to Lockie, you know, Lockie, you could grow capers. What would I want to grow capers for? He hardly knew what a caper was. So I explained and said they grow in Sicily. They grow with their feet hard up against rocks. Look at your paddocks here. They're covered in rocks. They grow capers very well. No, don't want to do that. And I tried to grow capers here. Didn't succeed very well. There's now somebody in the Western District growing capers commercially. And another one, that was a later one. I said, not to Lockie, because he always said no straight out, but I said to Janet, you know, Lockie could grow lots of different mushrooms if he had the, you know, had the proper building. Oh, she thought about it. Anyway, that was a no-no too. So, I try, but they don't always set seed. No.
So you started to talk about the more metropolitan garden bees. Could you say a bit more about that?
There was one called Tatin. It was a 1940s garden, and we didn't go on that.
Oh, the one up
and we
in...
It was only a one-off.
The one up in Heidelberg?
Yeah.
Ivanhoe?
Yeah, can't remember the name. Would have to look that up.
It doesn't matter. It's not relevant to us.
Were there any more in Melbourne? I don't think there were.
No.
Okay.
Although there are so many historic gardens, but...
However...
Yeah?
There was one in... Melbourne, the CWA. Will you tell the story of how that started? Fran Gardens once a week with a small band of...
garden history people. They're all garden history.
Yeah, good friends. They basically get on the list because they're friends rather than necessarily garden history.
It was when... what year was
2017, it? Melbourne got nominated for...
For the yearly...
The annual conference.
Annual general meetings.
At short notice.
Yeah.
And we looked around for venues, planned the metropolitan area for the garden visits, and the ideal spot for a lunch in the gardens... was CWA.
Which is in Lancel Road, Toorak.
But Jackie Kamardius, I think I'm right in saying,
yeah.
Who was the secretary of the organisation at that stage, looked at it and said, it's not up to standard. You can't invite people in here. And
look,
we knew that they were having no garden maintenance. And... So she started off the working bee.
Six weeks before we were due to go there, she said to Kathy Wright, we'll go and do the garden. And I heard from Kathy that was on. So the three of us went along and got down on our hands and knees and started weeding. Well, I mean, it's a huge garden, a couple of acres. And
in Lancel Road, Toorak.
Yeah, so we got the We got rid of a lot of the weeds, but there was no way we could get rid of all of it. And once you've got all these weeds, what the devil do you do with weeds? They had nothing there to get rid of them. They had one green bin, which was ludicrous, and it was usually used for all the food that came from
leftover
food. Anyway, so we did a bit of sleight of hand and got it all looking not too bad. And then the lunch was over and done with, and everybody moved on with life, and we continued with the garden.
And Jackie stepped back. Jackie had nothing to do with it after the conference, but yeah. Fran stepped up and became the organiser of the Working Bee.
And it wasn't a Working Bee, it was just Kathy and I. And we did that for a year or so. And they used to say, oh, you know, if you must have morning tea, you can come in here and have morning, you know, get a tea bag and have morning tea here. So we did. And then we kept going like that. And then they said, well, look, you've got more people now. Well, they didn't say. They just made it difficult and embarrassing. So we stopped going inside, and I started bringing morning tea, and we'd have a picnic. We'd put the tablecloth out, because after all, this was the CWA. You had to be the right thing. And, so we've been doing that since 2017. And they've finally decided to give us some money to buy things that we need. I've been doing propagating for ever since. I'd rip out plants that I thought were not good in a drying climate, get rid of them, and I'd put in substitutes, many of which I had in the garden. So I'd come along with, say, four plants of this and six of that, and you know, one thing when you're on Working Bees, you find that all you're doing is pruning and getting rid of plants that have died. And I think, well, it should be a more hopeful thing. There's only one thing better than having fun in the garden, and that's planting fresh plants. So I try and bring fresh plants every couple of weeks to put in the garden there. And quite a few years ago, we looked at all the trees that were in the garden, and we said, that needs to go, that needs to go, that needs to go, because they were diseased, they'd never been pruned, the branches were split, so sap would only be able to go up half. Look at the front fence there, which was split, cracked badly, because big trees like, not a Moreton Bay fig, what is it? Bay tree, no, not a bay tree. Magnolia, grandiflora, huge roots, and their natural habitat is on the Mississippi, in the Mississippi basin, water. And here it is, climate change, not enough water. Besides which, their watering system no longer worked. So we have to hose everything with hoses. And Kathy and I had scrounge lengths of hose off people's nature strip, and all these hoses were joined up with little joins. Mel did a lot of that. And
so did Kathy.
It was just awful. I mean, there weren't enough hoses. And the taps, they'd say, oh, I can't turn this tap on. Fran, can you come and turn it off, because I've got a much stronger wrist. And now, last time we were there, a plumber came around after we've asked for years to have the new washers put in, and the plumber has done all the taps. So it'll be fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been hard. But, I mean, you could say we were rude enough to just keep working. You know, we should have gone and let them let the garden go. But we've all had fun. It's been terrific.
And it is a historic garden. It's been around for a long time.
And there was talk about Edna Walling having designed the garden, but there's really no proof. At
her height, I suspect there are a number of people designing emulating in the same style.
It. Yeah. So we've done our best to keep up with it.
Hmm. So that's more or less the garden
working bees.
Yeah.
And, of course, Fran was on the committee. Well, Fran has ideas. Fran says, why don't we do such and such? And they said, good.
If you've
When's it going to happen, Fran? When are you going to organise
it? If you've thought of it, so...
There's a penalty for thinking of anything.
Yeah. Okay, you do it. You know all about it. So we've organised a few bus trips, you know, away for weekends.
Or just the day.
And I like to think of something that's a little bit different. So, and not tell them about it, really. And we had one up to the northeast. And do you know the film North by Northeast?
North by Northwest.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
And it starts with the plane crash or whatever. Well, we organised this trip, and Mel said, "Well, what do we call it?" And I said, "Well, we're going up to the Northeast. We'll call it." We did it together. Thought of it. We called it North by Northeast.
We did actually visit a couple of places due north of Melbourne before heading northeast, so it was a really most apt description.
And at these things away, you usually have somebody to talk on the Saturday night at dinner. Well, we organised the dinner at... Where was the dinner?
At the Swanpool Cinema.
Have you ever been to the Swanpool Cinema?
I have not.
Have you heard about it?
I've heard of Swanpool.
Well, it's really out in the Never Never, and Mel and I one year heard about the Swanpool Cinema, and we went and stayed at the Swanpool Hotel.
It's Tatong, but that's beside
the point.
Doesn't matter,
it's not far away. he always corrects me on things, it's very good. And then we went to a film at the Swanpool Cinema, and all the people from the surrounding districts come. It's not necessarily a film that is on general release, they might get it a few years later. And the night we were keen to go, they showed two films, and they had an intermission in between. And as there are families there, at half time, all the families get up and go into a room next door, and they've all brought their cups, and they have their cup of tea or coffee and their country cakes there, and it's wonderful. And that night we went, there was a great film on, which was in a foreign language.
Oh, yes. There was Man from Snowy River, which was not in a
foreign language.
Foreign language, and the place was packed.
And
after interval, they put on a second film called Bread and Tulips in Italian. Fantastic film.
Anyway, they missed out.
And everyone had gone home at half time.
Anyway, so...
But we enjoyed it.
Back to our weekend. So we had lunch at Tatong, and then we said, righto, in the bus, so they all got in the bus. Oh, we didn't have a talk over dinner either. And they all wondered... All wondered where we were going. It wasn't at Tatong, Mel. We had dinner at the Swanpool Cinema.
No.
And we...
No, when we went up and saw Bread and Tulips...
Yeah, we were at Tatong.
We were at the Swanpool Hotel, Tatong Hotel.
Yeah.
But for the northeast tour, we like to organise something a little bit different, and Fran said, we'll take them to the Swanpool Cinema. So over months of negotiation, we organised...
A film for them to see.
We organised a film called The Gardener, which was about the creation of a garden in Canada, I think it was.
In where?
In North America.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And we organised for the dinner, the local... auxiliary to serve dinner. We took them out there in the bus. They had no idea where they were going. Fran issued them each with a bag of Jaffas to roll down the aisle. We were greeted by a man in
formal dinner suit.
Formal dinner suit at the front door. Everything was just fantastic, far more than we expected. And you know how they have the slides at the beginning of films? Yes. Well, they had them in the old-fashioned style, and they even had one saying, "Welcome...
Garden History."
Garden History. And they had a collection of other slides, such as you might have seen at the pictures in the 1950s.
Yep.
It was...
Ladies, please remove your hats.
Yeah. And yeah. I think we go to the...
Now it's turn off your devices.
So they rolled their Jaffas down the... It was just terrific, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that was one weekend tour we organised. We organised a weekend tour to Sale District. Day trips were we...
Oh, with Fran... the Sale one. When Garden History people go on these tours, often there's husband and wife. A lot of single women or people who leave their husbands at home. But you can be sure the men who go are there under sufferance, because the wife has said, "Oh, come on, it won't hurt you a weekend away." Mm. Most of them are like that. And the Sale trip, I said, "We've got a couple of engineers on this. We need something to get the men in. So we organised for them to operate the swing bridge.
Or to be there and watch someone else operate the swing bridge at Sale.
Which was designed by?
Oh, I think it was designed by Monash, wasn't it?
No. Was it somebody to do with that musician? What's his name?
Oh, yeah.
Who was it?
Yeah, it'll come. We'll tell you the musician in a minute when the retrieval system works.
It wasn't. It wasn't Sir John Monash.
No. A G word.
Granger.
Granger.
That's, it was Granger's dad who had designed this.
And what is it? There was a harbour at Sale, and so, and then there's the road running south, and so when boats had to go through, they just swiveled the bridge.
Tall bridges, tall boats that wouldn't fit under the bridge, they could all get through.
So,
yeah. Well, it was hard to drag the men away. They thought that was fantastic.
But, you know, one other property was happened to be owned by the descendants of the Nicholas Aspro people. And the bloke gave a terrific talk standing on the fountain at the front. And they opened the Aspro Museum, which they happened to have in a barn. So people who'd seen or weren't interested in garden could go and have a look at the Aspro Museum. And lots of other places. I mean, so many places have artefacts. Some of them are better organised than Belmont's. Cobwebs and over the 1930s newspapers.
And then the day trip to go to Arthur Streeton's garden.
Well, that was tops. That was a real hit.
I thought we'll do a trip for the Australian Impressionists. So we started out going on a walk around Heidelberg. And along the river where they had camped, and then back in the bus.
Yeah, seeing some of the paintings that they'd painted, which are on enamel boards down by the river.
And
we did go to a...
Lots of paint. We had pictures of some that we couldn't show them otherwise.
We were in morning tea at a... or were invited into a fantastic arts and crafts house designed by famous Melbourne architect Desborough Annear early in the 20th century. And then we went up to...
Belinda?
Yep, to Arthur Streeton's house and had a look at over the house and garden. And we had organised to go to Tom Roberts' house.
Which nobody knows about that. None of the people had ever
this
seen it.
This took about 20 phone calls, including a number of phone calls to the bookseller at the bottom of the hill who said, you won't get in. And
the woman was a lecturer at Monash University, but highly eccentric. And Mal and I had been creeping around outside this place. We'd gone up a couple of times to do a bit of a recce, and I'd knocked at the door a couple of times when we thought that she'd probably be home, but, you know...
No, it didn't answer the door.
No. And, we went into this bookshop at the foot of the mountain, and the chap, we told him, and he said, oh, yeah, she comes and buys a lot of books here. Oh, she's very eccentric, you won't get in.
Yeah.
So...
He knew her because he had owned the house opposite, as well as owning the bookshop.
How was it I got her to acquiesce? We had her phone number, and it was persistent. And finally she said, well, you can come up and look at the garden from the outside. So I was happy to have the crumbs, so I said, OK. And before we went there, we parked the bus outside, and I told all the people in the bus. I think we might have had two bus fulls.
No, we had broke the one bus into two groups.
Oh, right, yeah. And I said, this group go round and have a look at the garden from down below. You can look up this group. We'll go and have a look at the front entrance. So I explained it all about this woman, and I said, we're going to stand at the gate and be all ready when she comes. So the woman came to the gate and started talking about it, but the group surged behind and pushed the gate open, and the group... And she said the reason that these people couldn't come in was because the paths were very narrow. So I said, doesn't matter. We're 18 inches, she said. Oh, that's fine. That's fine. No fat people on our tour. This was all before. And she said, oh, there are a lot of prickly plants and blackberries. They'll get caught on their jumpers. No worries. We're gardeners. We'll be right. Don't you worry. Anyway... The surge came.
And she eventually...
And she was pushed. We all pushed her, you see, so she led us around. She was horrified, absolutely horrified. Anyway, people, of course, said, oh, look at this plant, I haven't seen that for years.
Because she's a real plants person. She had run a nursery.
And she was listening. And she took the first group around the garden. And then she said to me, these people... Really, no plants. I thought, yeah, I tried to tell you that. So that was all right. The people came out, they swapped, the both groups came in, and she was quite civil when she led the second group around. But in the garden was a shed that
Tom
Roberts' studio.
Now, the bookseller bloke, he knew this because he, because he was a long-time resident. The woman had no idea what she'd bought.
She wasn't even interested, really. And I said...
And she hadn't opened... She'd lived there 4 years knowing she had Tom Roberts' studio
and she'd never opened it. You just couldn't believe it. Not that she opened it for us then, but she might have done it later. Anyway, when you go to somebody's garden, you always give them a little gift. And the people all got back into the bus, and I don't like, I get embarrassed about presenting things to people, so I nudge somebody else to do it.
Me?
My nudge was Mel, you see, so...
Usually.
We had a box of Hague's chocolate, and...
which we had bought for specifically for her.
Yeah, and what did you say? I've got a present. A present for you. And she, no. And she looked down at Mel, who was holding a bag that said Hague's chocolate, and she said, yes, and took it. It was very funny. All the people in the bus thought it was terrific.
Yeah, so.
But we also had on the bus, we had Peter Roberts, who's the grandson of Tom Roberts.
Yep, it's all right, he cancelled. He cancelled. David Jelly knew him, and I don't think he was on the bus.
Don't you?
No, we can check with Pam.
He's still a grump, apparently. Pam was talking about it. Anyway, that's by the by. All right. What else have we done?
Well, I think that, well, we've organised the odd event, such as the a walk and talk. From Newmarket Sale Yards down through the path that the animals used to tread when they were going up to the sale yards, which is now a rather lovely stroll over cobblestones and by post and rail fences.
Looking at the houses that have been
and
built.
And looking at the variety of modern houses that have been planted along there.
You know, the...
Amont Park.
Yeah.
Walk and talk there.
Walks and talks occur at the beginning and the end of the year.
Okay.
So I think we've organised a couple of those.
And the latest one we did was in February.
Oh, yeah, that was very popular.
Garden City.
In Port Melbourne.
That was
and
fun.
As luck would have it, they had a beautiful, what turned out to be a perfect amphitheatre for Fran's talk.
A little.
And show and tell
in the local park. Children's playground. And there were sort of terraces edged with stone, and we got people to sit on this. And I'd done a great big map, I suppose it was like this, drawn all out of the river and all the swamp areas and everything. They were fascinated because nobody had ever been down to Garden City. And I tried to...
Most had no idea where it had, where it was.
They all had to have, those things in the car on their
GPS?
GPS. They all had to get there by that because they couldn't read them always. That was very good. And as we were going through looking at the house styles, a lady who lived in one of the houses popped out, and she told them the story of how she'd lived in this house all her life and how her parents bought the thing when in the 1920s. And everyone, you know, it was spontaneous and everyone was fascinated. It was terrific. Yeah.
So. Yeah.
I should probably ask you, Mel, about your work as treasurer.
Well, it's just numbers adding up. They all added up, and certainly the place is financial, but it had nothing, and became a lot more financial when I was treasurer, but it had nothing to do with me. And I kept telling them, right, what are you going to spend the money on? Which is what we're supposed to do as a non-profit. But they just keep accumulating and cry poor when COVID comes along and cancels a conference which knocks their finances for a year. But they're all back on an even keel now. And, So
when did you start?
Wouldn't have a clue what year it was. 6 years I followed Elizabeth Walker. And I don't know, I think the 6 years was the limit, because that's
two terms
of 3 years, and involves, and automatically gets you elected to the National Committee, where you can say things of a broader nature in general conversation, as Fran did. She wasn't just working bee, she was prime mover and shaker. I was not quite that. I deferred to the experts on the National Committee, but that involved going up to Sydney once a year in a 3 day conference in
wherever
in February, in January, and I think there were a couple of phone link ups. What else? I think it's relatively relatively unremarkable, but I guess it did get me in the box seat to be heavily involved in the Melbourne conference in 2017 when we were all caught short, because they cancelled New Zealand, and normally there's 18 months of preparation, we had six. So we had to find all the gardens, all the buses, the all the speakers, and cast the net around. Well, I really had very little to do with the speakers. We did actually, through garden, our interest in garden history, we were, both of us were au fait with the MMBW plans of Melbourne when they were sewering Melbourne, many of which have fantastic detail of the larger properties, such as where the dunnies are and the stables and various other special things. I mean, the plan of this street had next door stables, which were there.
They were there when we bought our property.
Yeah. And they stabled the Porsche there for a while. But eventually they knocked it down and had a bit of a lean. I think if we'd been there with the resources, we'd have restored it, but they didn't. So we cast around. Oh, well, I talked just for 10 minutes about the MMBW. So that occupied a bit of my time that I probably didn't have with all the National Committee all the conference committee meetings we had to have. And we cobbled together, I think, 30-odd gardens for the conference, and a number of speakers, including people such as Emeritus Professor of History at Melbourne University, Graham Davidson.
Yep.
He was Helen Page, I think, got him because he was in the Deep Dean U3A, which is very active.
He wrote Marvellous Melbourne, didn't he?
Pardon?
He wrote Marvellous Melbourne.
Yeah, oh, well, we've got the book.
Yeah.
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 And there are other very good speakers, and, of course, it's a challenge, A, thinking of a theme, and B, getting speakers to speak to the theme. You have to take... and go a little bit off-piste, you can't actually achieve that. Although Brisbane did it pretty well, Ipswich did it pretty well this year, I thought. And then you've got to produce a conference booklet, get someone to write up the notes on all the gardens, and some owners are not keen to write up their gardens, so you have to do that yourself. And there's just... such a lot of things to do, but we organised some fantastic historic gardens, and it all went swimmingly. Even the mastery of the buses. I mean, we had about five buses, so you've got to dovetail the buses. You can't have them all rock up to the same place at the same time. And rain was a problem one day on the optional tour up in the Dandenongs, but we'd luckily managed to commandeer a tent, a marquee, which the National Parks Association happened to bring out for us.
So now,
this is a historic garden we went to called Our Place.
We've been guessing that.
See that?
Yes.
A perfume bottle, yeah. Schiaparelli.
Yep.
All dug up in our garden.
I will, while you're doing that, friend, I'll just be one moment.
A little bit of a face.
Yeah, part of a China doll's face. Yep. A 9-inch nail, if ever I saw one.
I don't know if you can read what that...
So, Australian artillery?
Yeah, it's some First World War.
Yep. It's a button. Yeah, a button from someone's uniform.
And realise the connection, Kate. But we chose that title. We didn't reference Graham Davidson at all. But I don't know whether anyone realised that we'd called it after... We'd call it the same title. You would have known.
It's generally accepted, Marvellous Melbourne.
Yeah, that's right. But Graham Davidson wrote the book, and here he was talking about it. So
he would have been pleased, I'm sure.
Yeah, so it was terrific.
So can you tell me a bit about how the branch and the national sort of committee work as far as... you remember in your experience?
Well, by and large, the branches are independent of the National Committee, except that the branches have input by having a branch representative. And so one of the things they spend the money on is the airfares for the occasional bonding sessions that we have... which probably the best benefit of that is just bringing everyone together and also the national conference. I think it feels like a national organisation, but the branches really have to fund themselves. So there's no interaction really. Except sometimes if they can't find an auditor for the state branches, then they just nominate the auditor who's doing the audit of the society. But I think that's changed now because they changed the auditors. So that is a spare if it's... there's a spare that's not written on if you want. Although it's not relevant, I guess it's a verbal, if it's a verbal history.
Yes, yeah, there would be nowhere for me to lodge that, no.
And then, of course, you've got to get things like that printed. And
That's the MMBW plan of our garden.
Okay, yes.
Now you can see the circular and the... Well, it's pretty small, isn't it? But anyway...
Oh, it already had that sort of garden shape.
Yes.
So Fran recreated that.
That wasn't like it when we bought the house.
Got you.
And we got a little bulldozer thing in to get rid of what was in the garden.
Bobcat
thingy. And... I reinstated that shape in the garden.
But that's next door's stables.
Okay.
See, it was really to indicate where the sewerage lines were.
Yes.
So our sewerage line is the length of the house, and I presume that's our dunny, with the lane along there for the horse and cart to collect.
Yep.
Yeah, so they've all got... They've all got it in one way or another.
Nightman.
Yeah.
And
that, you know, you haven't already conveyed that you would like to say about your work with the Garden History Society? You've told me a lot about your activities, which is fantastic.
Mm. Well, we've been to a number of conferences now. We started going about 2000 and probably been to 15 or more, I suppose. And we've been on lots of events that other people have organised as well. And there's a camaraderie about the place. I mean, when we went working, be it Castlemaine, we stayed, six of us stayed in the little house, little lean-to next to the picture theatre.
Yeah, I said that.
Kathy Wright organised a weekend away, several days, based on a property in the Western District, where some people stayed in the stables and others we shared a shearer's house, a house, 1950 house, and that was terrific. You know, I mean, we had half a dozen or more in that house. So,
yeah.
Anything?
No, I can't think of anything else.
No.
I mean, general dog's body helping before meetings at Moolah Hall, shifting furniture, doing the dishes, you know, all that.
Yeah, Fran, so there was a time there when Fran was the only one who knew how to turn on the dishwasher because it was a bit quirky, I think.
Yeah, we've probably had a few oops moments. I think we had an oops moment when I said, I volunteer at the herbarium. Every Monday afternoon I go in and mount specimens. And I know the code to get us in. One evening there was a garden history thing on at Moolah Hall, and they needed something like an extension cord or something, and I rummaged around in a few places and said, oh, I know where there's... I don't know if it was an extension cord, but I said, oh, in our room. So I was going like this to get us into our room, and it was definitely a no-no because the security man came and said, that room's been opened and that's naughty. So that was all very embarrassing. Yeah, little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Yeah, so I'd usually be roped in for some contribution, generally fairly minor, for each of the lectures when Fran was on the committee, and probably before you were on the committee.
Yeah, we used to do a lot of sharing. I said, if everyone's going up to these working bees, it's silly to take seven cars. We'll do a bit of sharing. Well, that was all right, except that we found always we were doing the driving and the other people were doing the sharing.
Yeah.
Always we'd go up with two people in the back of the car. But I don't think we ever went in anybody else's car,
yeah,
we went
in Helen's a couple of times.
But we'd have to take all the tools and equipment, you see, so we wouldn't just put in two digging forks. We'd have three or four and, you know, you'd take all these big tubs up and they'd say, oh, Fran, I came up and I didn't have a tub. I'd say, oh, well, take one of ours, you know. So it was... That was sharing, wasn't it?
Well, that happens every week at the CWA.
Yeah.
Fran brings all the tools. There are no, apart from a spade, there's no tools available.
But
and no one brings anything.
Anyway, that's just par for the course.
Sometimes secateurs, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, to explain for the audio that Fran brought out a whole lot of little objects that have been found in the garden including little pieces of remains of toys, perfume bottles, bottle stoppers. As I said, I think I mentioned a 9-inch nail, which has been hand-forged very clearly. And I think that actually looks like a ring of
not,
some kind.
Not Victorian.
No. But that really draws together very nicely the connection between gardening and the historical that you both share.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a school friend of one of our daughters, and Olivia had told her about how her mum and dad had found things in the garden. And this school friend came, and as soon as she got here, she didn't want to play games with Olivia. She said, "Give me a trowel, I'd like to do some archaeology."
Was that Lisa?
No, no.
Okay.
No, it's brilliant.
Yeah, a dice. Yeah.
Oh, of some kind, yes, but it's got the letters yeah, yeah. Edge, which is
Been in a fire. All went out with the ash.
Okay, unless there's something else that you feel you want to tell me, I think we've probably sort of come to a natural end. And I'd just like to say thank you very much for taking part. It's been fascinating.
Pleasure.
So I'll turn the recording off now and explain to you a few things about what happens
yeah.
next.